Good morning and welcome to another episode of Smashy Business. I'm Lubna Hamdan.
And I'm Richard Fitzgerald.
And today we're going to talk about the Bahrain F&B group that's taken legal action against a pro-Israel chef, Susie Massetti. It's also denied affiliation. Don't worry, we're not going to cling to that too much. We're going to move on quite quickly and get right into business. Apple is being sued by the U.S. Justice Department, and it's lost $115 billion in market value because of that. Hermes customers are also suing the company after it declined to sell them Birkin bags, the bag everyone wants, but no one can have unless you're very, very rich. Ex-CNN anchor Don Lemon has hinted that Elon Musk is racist, and he said he's more sensitive than convicts or presidents. And then Park & Shares, great news for Dubai. Park & Shares rose 30% on the Dubai trading debut. We're going to talk about that up next.
Great. How are you?
Nice mix of stories today, Richard.
Yeah, there's a lot going on. It's quite, it's just, you know, when Waleed left the show on Wednesday, Waleed Shahabi, we were just saying that there's just plenty to talk about. You know, the listeners are on a journey with us with Smashy Business Daily Show, but there's just so many stories, like there's five today, you know, and
the
more that we pump out on our social channels, there's just such a variety, there's many countries, there's many activities. Business is a catch-all thing, right?
It is, but you know what's interesting is that the real conversations happen behind closed doors, and I think maybe one day we'll have a behind closed doors segment or something like that.
Well, you know, that's a good point, but you know, that isn't that the role of media to bring these things out from behind closed doors?
Yeah, I mean, this is kind of sort of an insider's take. This is, you know, a chat show. It's not about the breaking news, but we do kind of try to give the listeners
a little bit of flavor, a little bit of analysis.
Bit of a spicy, juicy, you know, take on things.
Just, you know, provide value, right? Like the show's supposed to provide value. Like Smashy Business is supposed to let people understand the Middle East and to figure out the business opportunities and to understand things.
But definitely, while having a little bit of fun, right?
Yeah, absolutely.
Okay, so someone is not having too much fun. She's Chef Susie Massetti. So the Amriya Group, I hope I'm pronouncing that correctly, they own Maso and the Orangery restaurants in Bahrain. They own a couple of other things as well. It's a very nice kind of company run by run by the CEO Khalid Al-Rumayhi, who was the CEO of Mumtalakat in Bahrain. That's a big holding company, and the Bahrain Economic Development Board. So they have taken legal action against the chef, who's obviously facing backlash for liking and commenting on pro-Zionist posts. She claimed that she created both of those restaurants and kind of hinted that she was a part owner. Now, they've come out rather quickly to us and said, you know, this is our statement. She's not involved in this at all.
Yeah.
And it's good that they've come out to share this, because clearly they've felt the heat of everyone calling to boycott those restaurants because of the affiliation with the chef.
Yeah. Yeah, I think like sometimes there's ambiguity. It happens in the F&B industry in Dubai as well, as sometimes that the name of the restaurant and the chef is what consumers know.
Yeah.
But actually the chef might have been working there as an employee and mightn't have any ownership. And then the chef might go on somewhere else. Like happened in this case, this lady now has Luna, I think, a restaurant
Bahrain. Yeah, she opened Luna restaurant in Bahrain in Feb,
And like technically that's her vocation. Mm. That's what she owns. And if people want to vote with their wallets, then that would be the outlet. And that, I think that's the point of this statement, is to kind of don't punish us.
Exactly.
This is like 8-9 years ago. This lady was an employee. So
she left in 2018,
Okay, 2018. Mm. So I think it's just about letting people understand. And I think, as we always say on the show, it's like it's good that people communicate. And
absolutely, absolutely. And it's good that they've made it clear. Yeah, but you know what's interesting?
But then they're suing, so.
I mean, they're not suing her. They've notified her. They've sent her a legal letter to take down any mention of the restaurants, to clarify that she doesn't own them on her website.
Fair.
And she's taken down her website.
Cool.
But I remember back in a couple of years ago, maybe 10 years ago, something like that, Roberto's, I think the Roberto's in DIFC, right? They kicked out Roberto himself, and you know the local partner took over the restaurant.
There could be a whole thing about DIFC restaurants. I think like
Absolutely.
LPM is
Absolutely.
Another one like that.
Yeah.
You literally could have a whole thing on it.
But I think like the lesson here is that no chef is really you know irreplaceable, and no one is irreplaceable in business.
Even Bulldozer
right?
Group that split up as well, like. That had a lot of those places in the IFC. But no chef.
Bulldozer Group was a total, I don't know. It was a mess, I think, because they had, they would open outlets and shut them down 6 months later, a year later.
F&B, I think you have to be, even the best F&B groups do that. Like they pull the plug when it's not working, even the ones who have the hits. But
true.
I think the famous brands under that group went a different direction and the... Mm. And they're called something else now, and then we can look into it. But like,
let's look into it because I don't have that much information about it. But it's Bulldozer owns what used to own Cipriani and right. Apple. We were talking about this just yesterday. Apple is being sued by the U.S. Justice Department and 16 attorneys as well. They're accusing the iPhone maker of basically a monopoly, so of violating antitrust laws by blocking rivals, competitors from accessing hardware and software features on its popular devices.
This is fascinating, isn't it?
It really is.
Because Europe went after them for ages. Mm. The golden child of Americans, Apple now is being sued. And you mentioned at the top of the show, the value has already dropped. You know what? Like, they're so right, though, but it's just so hard to run a big business now if you're going to be said, hey, you can't do that. Like, the technical stuff here is, like, they can get them on everything because they're like, hey, you have to buy a separate charger, literally by you having a separate charger. And Apple will say, yeah, that's for safety. And environmentalists will say, well, no, that's for wastage.
Yeah.
So Europe is standardizing the charger, and Saudi's actually standardizing the chargers now. So Apple are being cut a little bit. Like, they're going to be attacked in many different ways.
Absolutely. And they are facing, you mentioned Europe, they are facing probes there as well about whether they're complying with the Digital Markets Act.
They got fined 2 weeks ago, $3 billion or something in it with the Spotify thing as well. But yeah.
Really?
Yeah, in Europe. Yeah. But this is the first time they've really been attacked in the US. And it crosses everything. Like, it's a walled garden. Mm. You know, when you're in the Apple ecosystem, like, nothing else can get in. Mm. And it's across hardware, software. They've made services really big in the last sort of 5 or so years, with the cloud fees that you pay, with the music fees that you pay, and all the different services, and of course entertainment as well. You know, Apple TV as well is part of this.
Yeah, true. I mean, I really do like Apple TV. It was once the world's most valuable company, Apple, at over $3 trillion. So, but it's underperformed on both the Nasdaq 100 and the S&P 500 this year. And I mean, it's no stranger to regulatory scrutiny, but I wouldn't feel too bad for it. I feel like it will probably survive this and get
probably
away with
survive,
it.
Yeah, as we sit with all our Apple devices on the desks and their privacy isn't listening to us at all, so we're safe. We're good.
We are safe. Have you ever shopped at Hermes, Richard? This is coming up to our next story.
You know what? Recently, I received a gift.
You look really excited there. People listening on podcasts can't tell, but you got excited.
So I started listening to the Hermes story on the Acquired podcast. These two kind of Silicon Valley guys do a podcast. And Lubna, like, they basically read books and read the history, and then they do a 7 or 10 hour episode series, right? So it's like listening to an audiobook.
Yeah.
And Hermes was started by an orphan in 1839 in Paris. And, it's a whole story about it. But, like, the experience... So it started, like, as with horses, saddles and stuff.
Yeah.
And the experience... And then it got into other things. But basically, I received a gift recently from Hermes. And then the shoes didn't fit. And then my mum went to change them. And, like, the experience, the shopping experience that you're alluding to, of which I don't have the time for, but it was described to me as, like, you would need time for this, you know? So it's quite an experience.
So you can't find time to go and exchange your Hermes shoes?
I haven't had time, though.
Seems like a very good problem to have. It seems like a Dubai problem to have, you know?
Yeah. I don't really have patience for the shopping stuff. I appreciate it. I appreciate that... I really think there's a place for sitting and having tea and having this thing and being in a waiting area for an hour while you try shoes on. I appreciate that. I just don't have time for it. Yeah. And I can't rationalize it.
Right. Yeah, understandable. You have a business to run. And not everyone, you know, prioritizes that.
But I'm glad those stores exist. But yeah, you shopped there?
I've actually never shopped at Hermes. I don't know. I really like it. But I don't know. It's pretty expensive, right?
Yeah.
So I don't know. It just hasn't
the
been
Birkin
my brand of choice.
But would you like? So say they're available. Is there scarcity? Are they not available?
I love I wouldn't say out of touch, but I love how uninterested you are in the fashion industry that you don't even know the deal with the Birkin bag. The Birkin bag is very hard to get. It's very, usually they put you on a waiting list.
Can you not just go on a website and pay 50,000 dirhams and get a bag?
No, because that's the point. That's the point of the controversy behind the Birkin bag. They torture you and they just make you... You know, that's how it became so exclusive and so expensive, and people go crazy for it. Because, so that's why consumers have been complaining, and this is where this lawsuit comes in. You know, people have been saying, right, we've bought so many, you're using the strategy to make us buy all the other products that we don't actually want to necessarily need or really want, but
we just want the bag.
But we need the bag. So you need to buy X amount from Hermes in order to be put to actually get the Birkin bag.
Ah, clever.
That's the point. Or unless you know someone who knows someone, et cetera. Otherwise, it's very hard to get your hands
on. That's why the price is so high and second market and all this sort of stuff.
Yeah, exactly.
But also, all the items of Hermes are handmade, handcrafted, and they're in lowish supply anyway, right? Like, it takes a bit longer.
Yeah.
It's not fast fashion, basically.
No, it's not fast fashion at all. And look, it is quite beautiful. The scarves are beautiful. The shoes are beautiful. But the Birkin, let's... dive into that a little bit. The Birkin is named after Jane Birkin, the fashion icon, of course, was an actress, passed away. In the 80s, the early 80s, during a flight from Paris to London, it's just a nice little story here, Birkin discussed her need for a functional bag with the CEO of Hermes, Jean-Louis Dumas, and that's when he created the Birkin bag for her. That's quite lovely.
Do you know what I saw on an Instagram page in Lebanon yesterday? And I think when we write this story up on Smashy Business on social, if we go with this headline, let's grab the video from Lebanon, because there's about 20 people with the orange bags unboxing yesterday.
Really?
So there's some link, like people in Beirut are all over Hermes left yesterday for some reason.
Wow. Okay. I wonder if they're real or not. The story is up on the feed already, but it's worth putting that video up. We'll put that video up. So Hermes is now facing a lawsuit that alleges that it unfairly restricts the purchase of its iconic Birkin bags to customers with a sufficient purchase history, which is what it requires for anyone wanting. I laughed when I saw the story because people are just getting so upset over a bag. It sounds really ridiculous, but you know what? For women, it's kind of like watches for men, right? A lot of men are obsessed with watches, and they get really, like Michal Kanu, for example, of the Kanu Group, prominent Emirati businessman. During the pandemic, I remember he was tweeting about how sad he is that, you know, he was walking in London past, you know, Patek Philippe and all the big watch brands, and the vitrines are empty, you know? And they really get emotional about this stuff. So anyway, two California residents have claimed Hermes is breaking antitrust laws by tying the sale of one item to another.
That's two U.S. antitrust stories back to back.
Exactly.
Maybe to the Middle East. We've got no antitrust issues here. We're good.
Let's move
Monopolies welcome.
Yeah, exactly.
Scarcity and luxury welcome here.
Let's move. Before we discuss Parkin, Elon Musk is always in the headlines, and it just gets more and more interesting. I don't know if you saw that interview with Don Lemon.
Bits of it.
Yeah. Did you think that Elon was being sensitive? Because that's what Don Lemon is claiming, that he was being very sensitive and didn't want to answer any questions accusing him of being racist, basically. He was just defending freedom of speech on X. I thought he was quite eloquent. I thought Don Lemon was the problem.
Yeah, fair. I saw him getting upset over one of the questions to do with his prescription drugs and things like that.
Ketamine, yeah.
What's happening a little bit, like media-wise, is some of these ex-presenters, they were getting like 20, 40, 50, 60 million dollars a year, right?
Yeah.
And the CNN doesn't have that check anymore. Zaslav, the guy who runs Warner Brothers Discovery, of which CNN is under, is on, he's got three or four, he's got billions of dollars in debt that he needs to pay back. So he's cutting all this stuff. And the new CEO of CNN is a guy called Mark Thompson, a British guy, ex-BBC, and he's one of the reasons why New York Times turned around. So he's come in now to CNN. And one of the first moves that Zaslav did under the merger when CNN came out under AT&T about 2-3 years ago, he killed CNN Plus. So that was supposed to be a streaming service that Jeff Zucker and those other guys were trying to get going, who's now working under IMI.
Yeah.
So CNN
Abu Dhabi
Plus
back to IMI, yeah.
In Abu Dhabi, yeah. So CNN Plus was killed. And now they're trying to revive CNN under Mark Thompson. So they're trying to do a turnaround story in CNN. But they don't have the check anymore to pay the $50 million a year.
Yeah.
So they still think that journalists who host and anchor CNN will get $5, $6, $7 million a year. Now that, as a journalist in the US, is a ton of money. Because if you write for a newsletter or a business title in the US, the average salary might be $100, $150K. So there's still a big disparity in what these journalists have been paid. Anyway, Don Lemon was one of those. He's ex-CNN. And the not the graveyard, but the opportunity for these guys now seems to be Musk, right? It seems to be, you know, Tucker Carlson is on X. And it seems to be like Musk announced last week that he's putting the streaming app X, so he's competing with YouTube TV and all these sort of stuff. So it seems to be, and he wants to, he says legacy media is dead, he's killing off legacy media, so he wants to welcome these guys in.
Yeah.
And he had an offer in place for Don Lemon to bring him in. He got sensitive and upset from the interview, has cut that offer now, and then he's kind of saying, no, Don Lemon's welcome. So let's see.
Yeah, let's see. I mean, I think it was Don Lemon's mistake, because I don't think he was being objective, and I think he could have played it smarter than that.
Yeah. Look, I saw a post.
Could have been a bit more playful, you know, with Elon, because Elon is kind of like likes that, right?
Yeah, true. When you interview him, you can be playful.
one day. Hey, why not?
But, so I saw a tweet that he put out the other day, and he retweeted a New York Post article with a headline, a real like tabloidy, clickbaity headline saying a Lebanese guy in the US said he wants to make a bomb or something like this. And and he retweeted it and put three exclamation marks. Like, it's just inciting hate. Like,
yeah,
I sent it to a Lebanese journalist in Love in Beirut, and I was kind of like, can we like debunk this crap? You know what I mean? Like, can we stop this racism? Because he's like the freedom of speech, but he's inciting hate. Like,
yeah, absolutely.
For me, I was just looking at that, going, "Is this guy the custodian of like, of what is hate speech online?"
Yeah,
and he's just going to retweet this, like, basically stereotyping, provocative, crappy headline. You know?
Yeah, it's giving Trump.
It was Trump vibes. It was very much like that. And you
Seriously,
I think like there's a bit of that as well. Like, let's not let him
Then we still get comments about people saying that our show is anti-Western. I don't know. Anyways,
some of those comments were valid. Thank you for your feedback, audience.
Thanks. we take criticism well.
She said stereotypes, not anti-Western, but yeah.
Dubai's
about real estate brokers. So
yeah, real estate brokers.
Which is an anti restaurant, but yeah. Estate brokers. Make
we
the
do.
City go round.
Yeah, absolutely. So Dubai's parking.
How's your house hunt going?
My what, sorry?
Your house hunt going. How's your relationship with real estate?
It's not going very well. It's really not. I tell you, like, they're just not the best. I'm going to stop there. I appreciate the hustle. We're going to stop there. But Dubai's parking, shares have soared 31% after the $429 million IPO. So it opened on Thursday. It's doing pretty well. It's are you...
Yeah, I did. So they had of the 429 million, they kept a retail tranche between 10%, and they increased it to 12%. So a retail tranche basically, so Reddit also IPO'd yesterday in the US.
Right, yes.
And it popped like 50%. It's 8 billion valuation now. But in the US, there wasn't a retail tranche, right? So what happens is IPO is initial public offering, but it's actually not a direct listing. Direct listing is when you go up without institutional banker is saying, here's a check, right? So you do a road show and you get cash,
and
then you know you've got the secure for a certain amount, then you go public and everyone's waiting with a check with a to go and buy more. They've instructed the brokers to buy on the opening bell.
Yeah.
Now, that's usually, that's the system in the US. That's usually the IPO system here. And then a direct listing is you take the chance of, you don't know if any, you judge the market. So Spotify did a direct listing. And they just go public straight away, and you just hope that people are going to buy on the morning, or whatever, or people are ready to go on the bell. Now, what's happening in the 6 of the 10, the privatization project that's happening in the UAE at the moment, we've had 6 out the door, three spin-offs of RTA. This is the third one,
right.
All of which Lubna have are up 20-30%. All the RTA ones, so Dubai Taxi,
Salik,
and Parkin are all up. The ones that aren't faring so well, incidentally, are Etisalat, and there's one more. I must get the name. Brazil Holding. There's one more that isn't doing as well, but the Dubai. The 6 of the 10 are doing well, right?
Yeah.
So part of that is because they've got good banking management, good lawyers, and they get the appetite in. You know, we reported that $71 billion was trying to get a share of that $429 million. And so I put in, like, I went onto one of the trading apps, and I put in, I'll be transparent because I put it on social media, but I put in 40,000 dirhams knowing that I was going to get it not very much, mm-hmm. right? And the way they do it, they announce the dates, and 2 days before the Thursday, so whatever day yesterday was, 21, on the 19th, they give you back. So I received something like 37,000 dirhams back into my account.
Right.
Right. So I put 40 in, I got 37 back. So now if I got the full 40 and it dropped 30%, that's a nice week.
Yeah.
That's a nice little win, right?
Yeah.
So 3,000 went public of my thing, 3,100, and it went up to 4,000 dirhams, right? But the reason why I invest in it is because it's a state-run, semi-state asset, it's utility, no competition, and they're giving 100% of their profits as dividends. So that's just, and I heard on the radio this morning, they were like, they missed the point that retail offerings are unusual. They were kind of like, hey, we want more retail offering. Yeah, but like, that's not how it works.
Yeah.
That's not what an IPO is.
Yeah.
An IPO isn't a retail offering.
Right.
It's only in rare cases that there's retail offerings as part of an IPO. But the bankers and the people managing these in the UAE know there's the demand for the retail offering, and they're saying that it's going to go up and up. So, but it's still a risk because when it goes out the gates, like yesterday on Dubai Financial Market, it can drop. So and there's a thing to protect that. There's something that calls it, there's a price stability protection, but the share price can drop. And some of the IPOs in UAE are down in the last sort of 18 months.
Yeah, and I mean, we saw a lot of companies delist as well, but I like that, and some companies will delist, and I think we can talk about that briefly, but I like that you kind of read between the lines, and that's what we also try to do on Smashy Business, is the angle that no one's looking at. So it's interesting that you mentioned the retail thing. Anghami, shall we talk about that? Something funny happened. I had written about Anghami delisting in February last year, according to sources on Frankly magazine, which I shut down, and you very gracefully offered me to join Smashy Business. You had predicted that in January.
Yeah.
So a month before I did.
Yeah. Publicly on the Campaign Middle East website with a date on it. Yeah.
Yeah.
It's cool. You can be second.
Nice. Look, great minds think alike. You know, I was right there behind you.
But that's a year and a half ago, and obviously there was a merger since then. You know, the OSN Plus, not OSN, OSN Plus merged with Anghami.
Yeah, OSN Plus, the streaming
Kipco
service.
Out of Kuwait. It's kind of a $50 million talked about to create a $100 million revenue streaming service. So the revenue from OSN, the revenue from Anghami.
Yeah.
And in the last sort of, so usually there would be approvals on this, whether it can emerge. Now, what we understand, and we would be good to have more of an expert on this, but what we understand is you need money to delist off the NASDAQ.
Yeah.
So the cash that was created out of that acquisition, that 50 million cash is going to be used to get them off the pipes.
Mm-hmm.
And now your story back then, and much to, because when they listed in the NASDAQ, it was billed as a, and there, it was an Abu Dhabi bass, Angami, and, you know, 8 or 10 of the team were in New York ringing the bell, and there was a party in ADGM as well in Abu Dhabi that evening when they went public. So it was even though it was 200 or 300 people out of Beirut who built the company, 10 years later it was billed as an Abu Dhabi listing.
Sure.
And on the NASDAQ in the US, we have had precedent like Swvl of having dual listings. And, you know, there is, you can list on the NASDAQ in the US and the NASDAQ in DFM if you want.
Yeah.
But what we think is happening here is they will delist, but they might go on ADX, but we don't know. The overnight, so yesterday Angami was up 13%, 0.8%, close at $1.8 per share. And after hours, it's up 7%. But as is typical, there's no comms on this. The last source of information is 12 weeks ago. Angami released a report, and then 1 week ago, I'm like, Angami did something with Ratana to renew their partnership. And Angami's market cap at the moment is $50 million. That might be in line with the $50 million that's needed to buy all the shares. You know what happens when I'm not an expert in capital markets, but what happens in a delist? Say I own 1,000 Angami shares, right?
Yeah.
That are down about 80% of when I bought them at, right?
Right.
Say I own 1,000 shares. I don't... They don't have to give me they're you know, $1.80 each, right? They don't have to give me that $1,800. They can buy out some people, and the rest of my shares I can stay as an owner. But even when they're delisted, I'm just not on the public market, so there's not liquidity, so I can't
sure.
go on a market to sell them. But I can
yeah.
still on the private markets, I can still ring someone up and say, hey, do you want my shares?
Yeah.
And a lot of this happened when Elon Musk bought Twitter, now X, for $44 billion, of which he's written it down to about $19 billion or $20 billion, and Waleed bin Talal,
Waleed bin Talal of Saudi,
so him and about a few others wrote a check, so they still own shares even though it's delisted.
Right. Yes.
But if you want to buy X shares today, you can't. But what I'm saying is, like, I have a choice now. If I want to sell off my Angami shares, I can. Or they might come to me when they're delisting an offer. So it's an interesting story to follow to see, like, is that markup now, the $50 million markup, is that where all the Kuwait cash is going to go? And are we all going to get a little check?
Yeah.
Or, so how will the process of the delisting happen?
Will be interesting. And I'll be waiting for that kind of information.
Yeah, and then the second part of it, yeah, you'll hear it second as always. I'll tell you first. Yeah, no problem. No, the second part of it is what you were talking about, is like, will they go off, and then will they go back on ADX? Because
I don't think so. Do you think so?
Probably not right now.
I think back then it was still a possibility, but I don't think that they would want to list again.
You're probably right. Like in how they communicate and how they transpire, maybe. But I think what they're doing now is they're creating a sort of an audio and a video joint thing. So usually people go off for a while, get the show together again,
yeah.
and then we go. Sometimes that's what companies can do.
Yeah.
But there is a lot of appetite. There's a lot of investment capital, as we've seen with Parkin. Lulu Supermarket Group announced yesterday they're looking at what will raise $2 billion as an ADX listing
right,
in the
yes,
next year
yes,
or so.
Yes.
So there's so basically that cash is there.
Mm.
And people who know, there's a lot of companies readying themselves to get some of this private investment.
Yeah,
that's there. And I know that ADX have funds to help, like we were approached, to help cover some of the commitment that's needed to go public.
Right. Gosh, it's really interesting. And I do feel like we can dive into this a lot more. But I just want to say one last thing about Lulu. Have you met the founder, Yusuf Ali? So he's built this, you know, conglomerate, basically, Lulu. Like, everyone knows what Lulu is. They're now looking at an IPO. The guy, I promise you, like, does not speak English like fluently at all, and he's managed to build one
incredible.
Of the. I mean, it's incredible.
He's
right?
He's a bit of a rock star, though. Like, I saw him opening a store in India recently, and the turnout, like, he's a super popular guy.
Absolutely, absolutely. But I don't know. It was just an interesting insight that, okay, you don't need to be fluent in English. Same, by the way, for the GEMS education guy as well.
Yeah.
His English is not, and it's weird because you've built an education, you know, company, and
yeah,
and your English is not very, very good. It's weird. I don't know.
Well,
weird.
I think you're a journalist, right? So I think sometimes
because when I interviewed them, yeah, we wasn't
able to. Maybe they don't
do that.
Want to. You know, don't
maybe,
people play
maybe.
The language card with journalists sometimes, right?
Yeah, perhaps.
Because they
perhaps.
Don't, when we were doing this smashy business show with Hala for years in Arabic,
yeah,
a lot of people would refuse to speak in Arabic,
true.
Even though they're Arab, because they
true.
Don't feel as articulate in talking, yeah. getting their message yeah. across.
It's the same thing for me. I mean, how would I do a business show in Arabic if I've only ever reported business in English?
Yeah.
So it's the same.
Yeah.
Anyways, our time is up, but a fascinating conversation as usual. Yeah, you guys already should know where to get us by now. Podcast, Anghami, Spotify, Apple. Or if you'd like to watch this, stream us on smashy.tv and check us out on YouTube as well and social media. Thank you and see you tomorrow.
Bye.